then the question is, what is it you want from them? That's the set. And if the set is to enhance pleasure, that's what it will do. And then low dosages are fine because they'll allow you to go into the astral planes. If you're going to use these chemicals for profound spiritual transformation, then you're going to use higher dosages. You're going to prepare your body with fasting and with study. And then you're going to do it in the presence of a guide. And you're going to be ready to keep surrendering. What it is really is psychological death. It really has the aspect of lest ye die, ye cannot be born again. It is the really, it is an experience that is very parallel to psychological death. And we'll talk about this all in the death section we have coming up. That we republished the Tibetan Book of the Dead as a manual called The Psychedelic Experience. Psychedelic is a word which means mind manifesting. It was a term coined by Dr. Humphrey Osmond to describe these experiences. So, I would say that in the time that I first started to experiment with these chemicals in 1961, the society that I grew up in and that I had trained myself in, the high priests of that society had become the scientists and had become the intellectuals. And what was valued was what you knew you knew. Do you understand what I'm saying? What you intellectually knew you knew. And science set up the criteria for what you know you know. It's public, it's reproducible. So that all of the techniques of introspection, which had been part of earlier science, were rejected, and things like behaviorism, where you measured things from outside, you treated the human being as an object and measured them from outside in, not from the inner experiences. So that when I, and that defined what reality was, and anything you couldn't measure by scientific criteria was treated as irrelevant. It was treated as something that our tools didn't have anything to say about. So it was an error or irrelevant or unmeasurable. So that the issues of the inner awareness or the soul or any of these things were not usable from science. Science had nothing to say with that, about that. What happened to me was that I met a part of my being that I, as a psychologist, as a professor of human motivation and clinical pathology and so on, I knew nothing about this experience from my intellectual point of view. All my studies hadn't prepared me to understand what this thing was. The person that wrestled with this most closely in the psychological domain was Carl Jung. He really attempted to bridge the gap between the mystical part of ourselves and the psychological. And then Maslow, and there were a number of people after that. And there were a number of philosophers, of course, that were doing this. Going back all the way to Heraclitus and so on. Socrates certainly played with this. Now, when I broke through, what I saw was that the reality that I thought was real was only relatively real. It wasn't absolutely real. What happened to my mind was a shift in consciousness that was very parallel to what Einstein did to Newtonian physics. Newtonian physics treated a certain realm of reality as absolutely real, and Einstein said it all depends on where you're standing. That is real under certain conditions, and in other conditions it isn't real. The reason I bring all that up is because over the years since that early 60s experience, the culture has changed. The worldview has changed. Relative reality is a much more acceptable place of consciousness than it was before. The intellect doesn't quite have the domain, the overriding power that it once had. People are aware of the limits of technology and science much more than they were 20 years ago even. The result is that chemicals are more of an anachronism now. They are less necessary to alterations of consciousness than they once were. I work with teenagers in California, and I'm amazed to find some of these teenagers who have never taken any of these chemicals, never read Eastern philosophy. They've just grown up in rock and roll lyrics, for example. Because if you follow what happened, the way it was transmitted into mainstream society was that the rock and roll musicians started to work with these chemicals. Then their lyrics started to reflect the reality they were seeing. Millions of young people started to learn these lyrics, repeating them over and over again, with emotional intensity from a teenage time when their chemistry is changing. I mean, I'm showing you the overloading of a phenomena. And they, in effect, change their worldview as a result of that and experience the relative reality that the Beatles or the Rolling Stones had done chemically, and they did it non-chemically through just listening to these music. And it got into a vast segment of society. So that in a way, it all happened. It's all over. It's very far out. I mean, it's very hard to perceive this because everybody says, oh, you're kidding, and nothing really changed. And I mean, I can do that trip too, but something did indeed happen, which makes these a little more irrelevant than they used to be, because there are more spaces to play with in the culture than there were before. And in these young people, I suddenly find, like, I go to the Middle West in the United States, which is a very conservative area of the country, and I give a lecture which 20 years ago I would have given only to people who had taken psychedelics, because they would be the only ones that would understand what I was talking about. And now I give it to a group, and I bet 70 to 80% of the people in my audience have never taken any chemicals. They haven't read Eastern philosophy. And I'm saying the same thing I was saying 20 years ago, and they're all going like this. Now, and I ask myself, how do they know? How could they possibly know what I'm talking about? And then I realize that it has entered into the culture. And because it's entered into the culture, these are less relevant than they were before. Now, I will, even though there has been a lot of pressure on me because of the misuse of chemicals, in other words, what's happened is, I'm sorry this is so long-winded, but I think this is first chance I've had to really talk about a lot of these things, not just here, but in general, this sophisticatedly. We have in the United States, and it's increasingly happening now in Europe, is the crack phenomenon, in which disempowered segments of society, like inner city blacks and other minority groups, who have very little window of opportunity, where there's high unemployment, where there's very little opportunity for reaping the benefits of an affluent society, through drugs can get immediate gratification, rather than... What society does in order to get itself to work is it works upon the basis of delayed gratification. That is, you get educated so later you will be able to have a car and a home and a family. And then you work hard so you can buy insurance so later when you retire you will feel secure. There's always a time-binding component in it in which you pay now, play later. Right? As opposed to play now and pay later, which is the crack phenomenon. And you take inner city situations now, in New York City, the 11-year-olds who are selling crack are making $500 a day, while their father is making $50 a day at a regular job and in a regular work, and they have gold this's and that's on them, and they are providing instant gratification to people who are basically frustrated in life. The other segment of the society that is using these is the middle class, affluent society. They're using cocaine instead of crack, but that's the milder form of the same thing. What they're using it for is because the myths of the culture promised them that if they got the home, the car, they did it all. They delayed their gratification. If they got all that stuff, they would feel a certain way. But the problem is they don't. Because it's externalized stuff. It's not inner stuff. And they were promised, if you have enough money, if you have insurance, if your children are going to the right colleges, if you have this, you will be happy, and they're not. And so there is an increase in alcoholism, there is an increase in all kinds of drug use of people who are frustrated because the fantasy was not a real fantasy. So that's two segments of society that are very vulnerable to the use of drugs as immediate gratification, nothing to do with mysticism. That may happen along the way, but it's almost by error. So what I'm saying to you, there's the context in which we're talking. And I'm saying, yes, these have use, and they still have sacramental, powerful use to taking you beyond your own model. But you've got to realize the conditions in which you're using them in, which has a certain paranoia connected with it, and a certain cultural value and attitude towards what you're doing when you're doing that. The dangers are